Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Capitalist Investor. Happy New Year, everyone. You got the full team back here. I am Derek. We got Tony. We got Ryan and Luke. What's up, gentlemen? How are we doing today?
What up?
Happy New Year.
2023. Looking forward to it. I think we can do a little bit better, maybe, hopefully, than 2022.
Awfully low bar.
There's a 90% chance that we do better than last year.
I hope.
All right. Well, yeah, we're going to get into it today. So we'll, we've got a lot to talk about today at the beginning of the year here. We'll try to keep it somewhat organized. I think number one, there's some key tax code changes that came through the Secure Act. Some of them are starting to go into effect. Some of them are already in effect. And they're going to have some movement in the market here. So we want to talk about those. We'll kind of transition into kind of a few 2023 themes, kind of what we're looking at, kind of what we're, intrigued by. And then, kind of tie that back into what's going on this week. And as always, finish up with our canceled segment, which is a very, very interesting conversation for sure. It's been kind of a conversation in the past, and now it's kind of coming to reality. So we'll see where that goes. So, guys up top, the tax code changes for, businesses, I think, is probably, one of the most, important probably isn't the right word, but kind of top of mind when we're thinking about how all of these different things we saw last year are going to affect the markets in 2023. Where do you guys want to start with this one?
So at the top, I think it's important to understand these tax code changes and the impact it's going to have on the markets in this environment. Because, just to kind of Absolutely. Set up what we're going to talk about is these tax code changes come possibly at the worst time possible.
Yeah, could we have another headwind, recession, please, right?
With recession coming in 2023, most likely, right? So off the bat, we're going to get into these a little bit more nitty-gritty, but we're going to talk about the capital expensing changes for businesses, the R&D, which means research and development expensing changes for businesses, and interest expensing changes for businesses. And all three of those are basically going to make businesses worse off because of these changes. So number one, capital expensing. Let's hit on that real quick. Back before, since 2017, really, you could deduct the full cost of hardware like trucks, machines, and
so,
all of those that
so
help
a business
grow. So that
was definitely a Trump thing because he was a businessman.
So there's two tricks of the trade when you're like trying to put a budget together. And they've used these gratuitously, but there's sunrising and sunsetting.
Right.
So and personally, we should be really familiar with this concept because our personal – the favorable Trump tax cuts, that's sunsetting in 2025 and some like really valuable things like the estate tax is going to revert back to Obama era stuff. And so a portion of what we're going to be talking about sunsets from Trump. They just have disappeared and they gradually wane off over time. Another portion is our beloved legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act. And I think, Luke, you're kind of leading us to it may actually reduce inflation, but it's going to do that by hindering business. And again, right. Timing, not great right now.
I mean, it's one way to decrease demand, but we're already going to be in a slowing demand environment for next year, right? I mean, this whole deduction for businesses, a lot of businesses grew the past 10 years,
well,
decade.
Think about where it came from. It came from President Trump, who was a businessman.
Yeah.
He's like, let's make this really simple. Rather than depreciating stuff over several years, like you buy a truck, like a dump truck for your company, deduct it.
Right.
It's now a business expense and sparks people to go and buy things.
Yep.
And now we're going to get back to this. I'm going to delay the tax. I'm going to do depreciation. Like all of these things, they're making it more complex again. And it's just going to slow down.
Well, it's a double whammy because you have the less demand for this year in a slowing demand environment. But then after this year, let's say we get back to growth mode next year coming out of a recession, then it's going to disinherit those businesses that did survive the recession, that controlled their expenses, that want to grow again. They won't be able to deduct the like you said, the trucks, the equipment, that won't help them grow and get this economy back on track next year. So it's it's a double whammy.
Yeah, maybe triple. I mean, we came off the technical recession from last year. I mean, we have this small little area where the market's bouncing back. But like last year, you know, that kind of investment decreased 22% in the latter half, maybe a little bit more, but you know, it's down a quarter already. And now the tax code kind of presses a little bit further upon businesses. Yeah. Like, don't, you know.
Well, same thing, you know, getting into like the research and development. Yep. Like, same thing there. We're able to – it's just things we're not able – well, those are not allowed to write off anymore.
Well, you have the construction and manufacturing being impacted a lot by the capital expensing. Then you have technology and healthcare and all these growth-oriented companies that have grown so much the past 13 years, you know, since 2008, 2009, that aren't going to be able to grow their business coming out of the recession. I mean, they're the ones that are going to be impacted the most.
Yeah,
this year.
And this went into effect, there's a stat here, about 1954? Yeah. Like, it's been 70 years since we're now changing this. I'm really curious to see where that really plays out and how it plays out. But, yeah, I mean, and that's going to be cutting jobs because we can't write off the deductions anymore.
Right.
$29 billion a year it will cost some of these tech and healthcare companies.
Yep.
That's what's estimated because of these changes to R&D expensing.
Yeah, but you know, you brought up a valid point. You said, is this a Trump thing? You know, some of them are in the Inflation Reduction Act, but, you know, it's really what's the government policy is the broader thing. And so we're not necessarily, nothing's been done really to disincentivize growth, but like we're abandoning our incentivizing of growth at again, like Luke said, the worst possible time.
Cost too. It also is going to be a cost to the consumer as they lose jobs from this.
Yes.
I mean, when you don't have as much of an incentive to grow your business or get back on track, you don't hire as many people, you lay off more workers. So at a time when the Federal Reserve is crushing demand with higher interest rates, which goes into the next topic, which we're going to talk about, interest expensing for these businesses that's changed for the tax code. But as they're going into that too, they won't be able to, you know, the economy, you know, it's going to lose jobs. You might see unemployment tick up faster, higher than 5 or 6% unemployment.
My mind's going through this. So what, like, you know, since what President Biden's been in office, we just saw it earlier that there's $5 trillion of new tax bills.
Right.
This is part that's going to help pay for that. What are we getting in exchange for the tax bills? Like Build Back Better? Like, what is that real? Like, is that going to help spark?
Hopefully, like, because the companies that would invest in machinery and
do
hardware.
Do you know who this benefits? The government, because they make more tax money because you can't deduct shit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So the interest is, you know, we touched on it. The interest is really, you know, it's not a great time to borrow. Tony, you pointed this out kind of religiously over the last couple of months. Interest rates have trickled up. I mean, it's a little harder to borrow nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the kind of nice things about borrowing, and this is, we're talking about it in business, but sometimes you can write it off. You can deduct it from your taxes. And so you lose a little bit of that too. So again, you know, it's we can discuss whether it's a good or a bad thing to use tax loopholes and deduct your overall tax burden. But now is going to be an interesting time to get to the bottom of it, right? I mean, you know, it's already kind of dried up and might disincentivize.
It's hard to grow. It's hard to grow when you've been used to near 0% interest and now it's anywhere between 5 and 7.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's the interest and the R&D changes in this environment, like you said up top, is just such a double whammy effect. It's like kind of, you know, think about it like your own personal finances. Like if you, you know, bought a house, right, and you're deducting your interest on the mortgage payment, and then all of a sudden they took that away. You know, what is that going to do to the housing market? Obviously going to have a bad effect on it, right? So that you can think about it the same way. All these growth companies, we've seen them blow up over the last 10 plus years, all taking huge advantage of the easy money policy out there. And now that's getting flipped around right as the economy is slowing.
That's like big picture. I think that's a big theme too, because one of the other little, you know, it seems little, but you know, those growth companies took those wild profits from the easy money days and they bought stock back, and then the stock price went up, and everyone, you know, was a sucker if you didn't own growth companies. There's one other little piece in the Inflation Reduction Act that there's going to be an excise tax. If you do buy your shares back, you know, and you meet some certain standards, you're going to have a 1% penalty. Yeah. That was kind of like a tax-free dividend for companies, and it was a way to bolster your stock price. And it made Apple maybe look a little sexier than, you know, an AT&T.
The stock buyback program it's a big deal, because when people aren't buying stocks, typically the market goes down.
Right.
And you like that artificial bump from a company saying, hey, I want to buy back my stock, I think it's too cheap, or I have conviction in it. Now they're going to get taxed for it.
Yeah.
Like, that hurts the stock market.
Yeah.
It's going to hinder demand.
Well, it's one way to return value to shareholders.
Right.
And the other way is through dividends. And that's what the point you were making, Ryan, is that, you know, there's stocks that are able to pay dividends might look a little bit more attractive than those growth oriented companies that don't pay dividends, that bought back their stock, that no longer will because they're taxed on it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these growth oriented companies can't, you know, really pay dividends because it's, you know, it goes against their cash flow purposes. And
right.
They're not going to implement a 0.2% dividend to their shareholders. That's not worth it either.
And just think, I mean, we had a negative 20% decline in the S&P 500, and there were companies, quote unquote, rushing to buy back their stock at the end of the year, and it still was a hindrance to the market.
And this may be why, because there's a tax on it now, so that, you
right.
know,
so, like,
everything was
we're not going to get that. I call it an artificial push.
Yeah.
Because of the stock buyback tax.
Well, there's like a confidence too, you know, like, hey, when Apple buys some shares of its stock, it gives you a confidence that
Absolutely.
They believe in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so there's a kind of philosophical thing.
Absolutely.
And then a lot of those companies too, we've heard this year after year, they don't pay their fair share of taxes, and we can debate that, but there's also a corporate minimum tax moving forward. So you're going to pay 15% moving forward, and that's going to raise the overall tax rate, you know, almost 0.5% on businesses. And
well,
so
here's what's happening, guys, and this is the most frustrating part of it to me, is the government continues to try to redistribute wealth by making, you know, the government bigger. Right, they're going to increase tax revenue and deploy that tax revenue somewhere else. That's all these, the 1% stock buyback, you know, tax, the capital expensing, get rid of that, R&D expensing, interest expensing, get rid of those, increases tax revenue. And where are they putting that tax revenue, guys? They're putting a lot of it towards the child tax credits.
Right.
And all that's doing is incentivizing people to have more children, you know, to you know, the lower middle class, or really the lower class, to distribute that money to the lower class. So they're taking it from the business owners, the, you know, the people that are stimulating the economy, creating jobs, and giving it to, you know, people all around that, you know, with child tax credits. I mean, that's what is happening, and that's not good for the long term, because again, you get $3,000 now, or you have a nice job, stable job that's growing your income over the next decade or two decades. I'd rather have the business owners supplying the jobs and creating and innovating the economy, which inherently increases wages throughout the economy.
You mentioned child tax credit. I mean, some estimates say that'll cost 300,000 jobs. So it's,
well, that's right.
You know, shrink the labor force, but
because I'm getting paid by the government, so I don't want to go work. Is that
is that
reading between the lines? Is that what that means?
Sure.
Okay.
I mean,
even if it's not between those lines,
like,
it's out there.
How's it paid? Is it paid monthly or?
You know, they just bump the child tax credit, and then in conjunction, and this depends on where you live too, but like the state tax, if you don't want to work, the state can make it pretty lucrative for you. And, you know, food costs a lot.
Yeah.
They can supply that, and they can lock your rent. I mean, in New York, you could probably make $100,000 not doing anything. Just,
I mean,
chilling.
On the other side of the spectrum, yeah. though, I can see that, you know, it all of so Luke, you made a mention that it is probably going to you know, affect like the lower class, because it's a significant amount of money.
Well, once you make enough money, I think you're from my understanding, you're ineligible for the child tax credits.
Yeah.
But maybe
look,
it could be worth it, because we've talked about inflation. Some of the hardest hit inflation items are those cheaper items, the processed foods, the cereals, the pastas, the things that are on the cheaper end. But like a box of cereals, like, $7 or $8 now. Like,
yeah.
That's what kids eat.
Not to get, you know, too political here. We should probably step back from the politics, but some people pay for that. And that's lower middle class people. Lower class people, you know, sometimes they're using a card, and that's, we fund that card. So it's really kind of like an assault on the middle class, in my opinion, not necessarily the lower
class. Well, it is, because the middle class can lose jobs.
The middle class, yeah.
It's always, this is an exact example. Like the past 5 decades, the middle class has shrunk, and it continues to shrink because of redistribution of wealth. Redistribution of wealth does not work. I don't know when the government is going to figure that out. I don't think they ever will, in my opinion.
That's a different conversation.
Yeah. Let's talk about the redistribution of wealth from Tesla.
No, well, hang on. Redistribution of wealth. So I saw, again, the Twitter machine. It just fascinates me. they were talking about how different political figures' net worths have grown or shrank while they were in office. And I think they – and again, I saw it briefly, but like you have somebody like Trump. He his net worth went from like $4 billion to $2 billion while he was in office. But you have somebody like Nancy Pelosi went from like $2 million net worth to like $200 million.
She's the greatest stock trader of our time.
But you had like Obama. You know, I know he was a very, you know, liked president by almost both parties, right? Like he was,
I don't know.
We'll have to check the data on that one. But
what I'm saying though, like, but he does a lot of like talking. He's a good talker. Yep. Like he's
eloquent for sure.
Yeah, very. So I mean, the press. The things he gets to do after he's done president and go speak and stuff, how much does he command for those? But like his net worth went 100x too.
Yep.
It is bananas. Like, so you.
I saw anyway. Susan Collins, is that her name? From Wyoming?
She's from Maine.
Then I got the wrong lady.
Liz Cheney.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
She went from like 2 million to like 38 million in 6 years. Yeah. Net worth.
Nice.
Like, does no one?
But no one questions.
No one seems
it.
To care about that. No like, there's no way
those,
that that
no one's
can
pulling
happen
those tax returns.
Organically. There's no just no way.
I mean, if you do the IRR on that stuff, it's like 200% per year or something insane. Like,
again, I jumped on my soapbox because I heard like redistribution, and it just sparked this thing. I'm like, man, that is bananas. How these people?
No, that's.
So
I think that encapsulates our government.
This is incentive for people to get into politics because apparently, when you get into politics, you get rich.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
All right, energy.
Yeah.
Energy seems to be going down. What's going on?
Good question. A lot of things are going on.
I thought China was opening back up. I mean, shouldn't it?
They've conquered COVID.
They have.
I saw the headline.
They
beat it.
They conquered COVID, but their crematoriums or something are all filled up or something. Is that what a crematorium is?
You would think the oil would be in more demand.
In November and December, they were building those isolation camps or whatever. Like, are they done doing that? Like,
I don't know what's going on over in China. So here's what my analysis is going to be: is I'm going to ignore what China's saying because I don't believe anything.
Probably the opposite, right?
Energy, not China.
So we know oil's going down, right? I mean, like
energy's going down.
But one of the reasons that it could go up is that China's supposed to be opening. You know, they're zero COVID days are behind them.
Love the word supposed.
Yeah, well, exactly. But the oil doesn't indicate that. I think is the big question.
The thing is, it's like I think globally we're just having a warmer winter than normal. Here in the United States, I mean, it's 60 degrees yesterday in Cleveland, Ohio in mid-January. You know, worse is probably yet to come. But we also saw minus 20 degrees 2 weeks ago. Yeah, like, it's just bananas Cleveland right now. But, you know, they were more worried about natural gas over in Europe. And they're just not as cold.
Yeah. Well, I think you got that going for it. Then you have a global recession that we're entering, that demand is falling a little bit. The supply chain's worked itself out a little bit for the most part. Now, Russia, Ukraine, depending on what goes on over there, depending on what happens in China, Taiwan, like that could spark supply chain issues again if things escalate over there. Yep. So that's something you got to pay attention to. But I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's that the expectations were for a pretty damn cold winter, and so far the past month and a half, it hasn't been too bad except for 1 week.
Yeah, all the future prices have spiked counting on a cold winter, and it's not, so now the prices are crashing.
Is the Biden bogey, remember we're going to scoop up all that oil when it hits 65?
Is that the number? Because
maybe it's a moving target and it goes down.
I think he said $70.
Well, we're getting pretty close.
60? I don't know.
Well, we're getting pretty close to 70 nonetheless.
Is he
going to
buy it back?
We're really close.
So some upward pressure.
The other thing is you know, it also impacts the electric vehicle market,
right?
Because as gas prices go down, and you know, as we do enter a recession, and people are, you know, cutting back their spending habits. I mean, but it's less incentive to buy an electric vehicle. I mean, if you're paying $40, $50 at the gas station, $30 at the gas station for some cars, and instead of the $60, $70, $80, $100 per tank. There's not much incentive to go out there and charge your electric vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I think EV producers aren't hitting their marks too. So there's less supply. And I saw like a study that said that the basic consumer you know, wants to buy EVs, but they just cost too much. And so you sprinkle on the cheaper gas, and now how do we feel about Tesla? Tony's our Tesla analyst.
I am not a Tesla analyst.
He's like an anti-analyst.
I'm so fascinated. But at the end of the day, cheaper gas helps the wealth effect,
yeah,
as Luke just alluded to. And in my opinion, I think it's such a big part of the consumer in the United States, at least, because if I'm not putting $100 in my tank and it's more like 50,
you can buy Bitcoin inside, right? Bitcoin
in the convenient market, right?
Well, that's one of the incentives that, you know, Tesla was priding themselves on, is they were actually on, if you go to their website to buy a Tesla, because I was just checking it out to see like what kind of modifications they had and how cool, like what the different things are. Cause I think Teslas are cool. I wouldn't necessarily buy one, but I think they're cool. But I was on the website and they have a calculation that shows you gas prices currently, what they are, and how much you would save buying a Tesla, charging it up in your home rather than going out buying gas, and how much the savings are over like a 10-year period.
What's that number?
I don't know that off the top of my head now, but I know it was a lot better a year ago than it was now.
And they quote it in the price too, by the way. They use that as an input into what the total cost of a Tesla is. They use your gas savings, so you know how much you drive. And
I mean, so my thing, I'm fascinated right now watching Tesla and Elon, because I've never been a fanboy. I'm not really a fanboy, but like he's just interesting. So he's going to be quote unquote stepping away from Twitter at some point, maybe redirecting his energy back to Tesla, which it happens to be down 70%, but it probably should be, and it probably will go down lower, because if you take a look at like a company like Toyota, who makes the most amount of cars in the world, they make $8 million cars a year. Versus Tesla's 1.3 million. The market cap for Toyota is 200 billion at 8 million cars. Market cap for Tesla is 350 billion for 1.3 million cars. Like that is bananas. Like it's just the price is not there. I mean, are they making, you know, are they making 50% margins on every Tesla they make?
No, they're barely profitable.
Right.
The only reason they're profitable is because the tax credits the government handed out for people to buy Teslas.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the magic question, right? We're talking about government. We're talking about picking winners and redistribution of wealth. And when people can't afford EVs, is the government going to come in? I love where you're going with it. But at the end of the day, you know, those tax subsidies to Tesla kind of lost them over time because they sold so many and you didn't get the full.
Well, with the redistribution of wealth, anyone making less than, you know, $25,000 a year will be driving a Tesla here soon.
EVs will come down in price because when you get a player like Toyota involved, and I believe the main head honcho at Toyota came by and said one day, he's like, I don't see this huge push for EVs. We're not ready for it. Like even he said, he's like, this is a huge undertaking. And when you got the only game in town, Tesla, building those, like there's a large focus on it.
Yeah,
when Toyota figures it out, EVs will become cheaper. And they're starting to build them now. Don't get me wrong, but they were really good at it.
You know, they were the first Tesla, and everyone that was, you know, on the left of the spectrum kind of bought the Prius, but it was like ugly. And, you know, the Tesla did it better, considerably better.
Well, let's go full circle here and go back to what we originally talked about that's going to impact Tesla and why it's not going to impact Toyota as much. Because Toyota has a lot of free cash flow. Tesla does not have a lot of free cash flow. They have no free cash flow.
They pay a dividend.
Capital, exactly. Capital expensing, R&D expensing. That's Tesla. You know, a lot. It takes, you know, manufacturing machines to build Teslas, right? Capital expensing,
yep.
Can't do that anymore. R&D expensing, a lot of research development to try to make the future of cars and technology, right? Can't do that anymore as much expensing. Interest expensing, they borrow a shit ton of debt. They can't deduct that as much anymore as rates rise.
That's why Toyota probably sat back and said, I'm going to pump our brakes on this EV thing and let everyone else spend all their money trying to figure this out. And we'll just wait till the prices come down.
And then default on everything. And then Toyota will be the only one to survive.
That could be.
Everyone will be driving a Camry.
Electric Camry, yeah. Sir.
Well, maybe. Does anyone have any full electric vehicles, though? I feel like Tesla is far ahead in the battery technology.
So Rivian, you know, it depends what you're looking for. In America, we like trucks, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so the Rivian's, yeah, you know.
The Lightning.
But you got I heard those don't work at all.
Well, you know, well, as long as you're just going to Costco.
Didn't it win, like, the truck of the year?
Yeah, I think that was
depends
bullshit.
How much you donate. Sure. Depends how much you donate to the whoever decides
to borrow money and bought that award.
How much you donate to Motor Trend?
The special Ford Car and Driver edition.
Bought the cover that month.
Yeah. No, I think you're right though. Like I think people were trying to do like a 50 mile trip towing some stuff, and they're like, oh, we only made it about like 75%.
The Ford the EV hybrid, the F-150 truck. It's up to like $92,000.
Holy cow.
Like, who is going to buy that?
And it can't and then you got to like plug it in every day because you're using it on a work site.
25 miles on the battery and then it switches to.
Because you do work with the truck. When you buy a truck, you know, you either look cool driving it or you're mostly doing work in America and you're hauling stuff. And so you add.
I've seen a lot of construction guys, depending on what they're doing on the construction, they leave their truck on.
Part of the sexiness of the Tesla is you get in, you press the pedal, and you lose your wig falls off. I mean, it goes so fast.
Like, quick.
We use trucks for a different reason.
I mean, hybrid makes sense to me because of the combination of gas and electric that makes sense to go.
It just doesn't work very well because my wife has one and it's pretty sweet, but the battery section of it is basically it's got two motors, right? So it's got the electric motor. It's going to kick off once you get above like third gear, essentially.
Yeah.
But when you're like cruising, then it kicks back into electric because it doesn't need as much power. Yeah. But it's only got 20 miles on the battery.
She has no frunk either, right?
No.
Yeah, that's fair. No. So since we're talking Tesla and you said it's gone low and could go lower, where's the floor? Where are we like licking our chops to buy? It's what, 110, 109? Right
I wouldn't
now?
Say I'm licking my chops almost at any point.
At what level?
I would consider, and I was talking with one of our CFAs about this, is, you know, when you get back to pre-COVID levels, around $50 a share.
Right.
Like, after the splits and stuff, you know, it's 100 some bucks now. $50 a share. If it gets cut a little bit more than half again, I mean, that's when you get back to a reasonable valuation that prices in the growth that, you know, they did pull forward a lot of growth. They executed on a lot of numbers.
That's a great number too, because if you take a look at Toyota, they're somewhere around a PE of 10. Mm-hmm. Tesla's somewhere around 20, like low 20s. So getting cut in half from here again is probably the
I would pay a little bit more for Tesla than Toyota. I'd pay 12, 13 times earnings rather than 10 for Toyota, just because I think they do have some better technology and they do have, you know, Elon Musk and, you know, behind the helm. But, you know, I think someone was saying on Twitter, actually, let's bring Twitter back into this, is, you know, if you were Warren Buffett back when you were young, would you be buying Tesla right now? And the answer is hell no. Yeah. Warren Buffett doesn't pay over what he thinks is a good value, and Tesla is still way overvalued.
Yeah. All right, cool. All right, then we'll get to our canceled section of the podcast. Or the podcast. What
what did you say?
I don't even know, man.
All right.
He was thinking McDonald's and they use cod and
filet of fish. See that Big Mac on his mind.
McDonald's is going AI, right?
Everything's going AI.
Well, you know, they're trying it out, right?
Yeah, they're in Fort Worth testing it, and so they're canceling human workers. Knew this was coming because they can't find human workers right now, right? So something needs to get automated. McDonald's is giving it a whirl down in Texas. They're getting rid of the majority of people and having machines that flip burgers and make French fries and pour drinks and stuff. But you read the article through it. They still have a few human beings in there to conduct
it's
it.
Not all robots.
Right.
Yet,
but and you also read it. It's more of like it's not a restaurant. It's not a – it's a to-go.
It's like DoorDash. It's a physical DoorDash, right? I mean, kind of pull in.
It's like a vent. It's like a food vending machine, I think. I think like people just stuff it and you come in and if there's a – you know, a quarter pounder there, grab it.
I just can't wait for Terminator to walk in while I'm buying a McChicken or McDouble.
Well, you know, the interesting thing I thought from the article is when I hear these stories, I'm like, oh, it's because fast food workers have been requesting 15 and they're going to request $25 an hour now to flip a burger. And so like, I'm an old stodgy guy, get off my lawn segment. but really, you know, Texas's minimum wage is $7.50, and the average McDonald's worker doesn't see 15 in Texas. Mm-hmm. And this is about efficiency. So like it's a lower cost in Texas and they're still giving it a go, you know, just to see if do we need.
Look at all the other costs besides just the pay though. You have insurance costs, you have medical costs that come with employees. You have all the other costs that people don't think about off the top. Minimum wage. I want higher minimum wage. Well, you also probably get good benefits too, or some benefits at least, that you don't account for in your wages. Like, this is stuff that a lot of people don't think about. But, you know, when you think like a business owner, when you think like, you know, that way of thinking, like this tech, you know, these machines are going to save them a lot more than just the $7.50 an hour or $8 an hour, whatever they're being paid.
Yeah, they're efficient on day one. Yep. Because like typically a new employee like might take a week, a month,
a couple months to train
to be a, like highly efficient.
Yeah, right. good at their craft. Show up every day.
Yeah, yeah. So
do the robots have to pay taxes?
Like, you know, sure Biden will work that in somehow.
We kind of need that, right? If you have a robot,
like what kind of tax are you going to
pay? That's exactly the value added point.
You know?
That's coming. That's going to absolutely come because we are – listen, guys, 30, 40 years from now – you know, AI technology is going to be far greater, I think, than a lot of us can even imagine.
The Jetsons, man, it's coming real.
Yeah,
right.
And how do you as a society, if you have middle class get shrunk even more, or you know, workers get shrunk even more because of technology like this? The only way the government can solve this problem per se is to give out some sort of socialistic program,
right.
Distribution of wealth. So you got to tax, you know, these companies more money. If you know, and that's going to be probably coming down the road, and that's just this environment. It's very scary.
But where it's really coming from is that people are still not working. You know, I don't know if they don't want to go to work. I was talking to a headhunter, that kind of places engineering type of people. You know, like manufacturing stuff. He goes, I can't fill these seats because everyone retired. So do we actually have? People don't want to work, or we actually just don't really have the workforce because there was the great retirement through COVID. Right. No one really talks about it, but I think about it. I'm like, a lot of people retired. Do people exist for these jobs? Because maybe those closer to minimum wage job people have upgraded their job because those jobs opened up.
Yep. Well, are those jobs good enough? So, like, for young people, we have higher expectations.
You come out of college, you want $100,000.
Like,
yeah,
I qualify.
Expectations are...
No, but, like, it's, you know, younger Zennials. Luke, maybe you could speak to this, but there's an expectation when you graduate college of, like, $100,000 yeah. plus salary. Probably. So, like, that excludes them from wanting to learn something and grow over time. I mean, yep. You're college educated, so would you settle for that? I mean, they're good jobs.
I think we have to ask, this is where I go with when I think about the future of technology and the future of our society. What do we want out of our society? What is a good life? When is too much technology too much? Like, we're getting to the point now where, you know, robots are replacing workers, you know, vehicles are becoming so efficient that they're going to drive themselves. Like, what's the fun in life anymore? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to go out of your way to call anybody, or your cell phone in your pocket, go on the web in your pocket. Like, everything's so efficient, so easy.
My mind's going somewhere right now. And it's like watching those reels on Facebook and Instagram. And you got like a machine dishing out a hamburger. And doesn't give the person the right hamburger, and they just take a bat to this, to this machine.
Derek, if you're not going to jump on this with an Idiocracy comment, I mean, I might. So
welcome to Costco.
It's something to think about. I think we're progressing so much that we're actually detrimenting the mental health. We're detrimenting people in general. I think it's going to have an impact.
If people can't work. How are they going to go buy the food?
What are they going to do? What are they going to do if they don't? I mean, this is why capitalism revolves around – this is how the world works. This is how our society is constructed. If you take away capitalist incentives, if you take away workers that you have to support 70, 80 million people out there on some sort of social program, we don't live in a capitalistic world anymore. Society has to be completely reconstructed.
I'm just very
concerned. I think we all need to start thinking about what we want as a society and what makes us all happy.
Not to get too far ahead here, like, you know, it's not going to happen in the next year or two, but if we tax those robots, you know, and then we just spend their money, it's not a bad idea.
I mean, they need
to pay
their fair share.
That's a society I want.
Taxing robots. That's where we're landing.
I think we've reached our time here, but over, kind of the break on Netflix, I watched this show, Ancient Architects. Mm-hmm. Have you guys watched that?
I have.
And I cannot stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like, I've become completely obsessed with it. And if
I haven't watched it. Is it where aliens are building pyramids?
No. So I'm into the alien show, but basically, you know, you always kind of know, like, hey, you know, it's probably not aliens.
It's probably not.
This show tells you what happened.
Okay.
It's freaking wild.
Can you just give me like a – I'm curious.
The – And
ancient, what are the ancient
and it ties into ancient aliens, but it doesn't it's a spin off.
It's
kind of the same theories, but the idea is there was an ancient civilization before what mainstream archaeology accepts.
Okay,
basically, society started in Mesopotamia around 6,000 or around 2,500 BC. That's kind of the main theory. And we have all these megalithic structures that there's no way that they could have built. And it goes deep into...
No way they could have built that we know of.
Yep.
Right.
The explanations that are given to us are clearly wrong. They don't work. They've never worked. They've been tested. They don't work.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking blocks weighing, 300 tons moved into, precision.
The workforce to build the pyramids, they said, like, I've seen those.
It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. It did not happen that way. What you've been told, there's no way it happened. No way.
So my concern.
Egyptians pulling up giant with ropes and trees. Before we end the episode,
I do want to say, hopefully you don't repeat history.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we don't look back 7,000 years
from now. Hoping the aliens don't come
back. And then look back at us and be like, they were just an ancient civilization that
wiped away.
Wiped
basically.
Away. Yep. Exactly.
They peaked in the late 70s.
So it's a great show. If you're interested in the origin of man, it's pretty cool.
Well, we need to bring back some things from the past, but we also need to bring back some 80s rock and roll. So
absolutely. Good music. Man, this has turned into a get off my lawn segment.
Back when music was good.
All right, guys.
I wasn't around.
Well, good show this week. Thanks for listening, everyone out there. If you have any questions or comments, hit us up at info@swpconnect.com. And we'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in the podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any investment, legal, financial, or tax strategy. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. Please consult a qualified professional about your individual needs.